This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Hi, my name's Neil. I'm an OTI member. Most of my adult life, I've been sober curious or looking to go AF or doing stints of going alcohol free, but they would never stick. I think the reason they didn't stick was because there was lack of community or peer support. So once I found out about OTI and the community, I had to join straight away. Joining the OTI community has been the best alcohol free decision I've ever made. It's such a fun, safe space to share your alcohol free wins. There's always someone to give advice or celebrate with you. So if you're sober curious, come and join the fun at OTI. You won't regret it. It's a game changer.
You've heard the podcast. Now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
I am absolutely perspiring.
Oh, I'm sweaty.
It's not even funny. It's 100 degrees in here before we get going, and it's bad. Okay, on a scale of 1 to 10, we're at about an 11.
Remember that time you came on and you went, oh, I'm so sweaty. And then you told me all the bits that were sweating. I thought, don't need to know that.
You know what? Actually, I can tell you again. I've got a situation behind my knees.
Yeah, sweaty knees. That's always the first one. Yeah.
It's really bad.
Come on.
Right, okay.
Welcome.
Sorry. Oh, it's a really sunny day, by the way. It's absolutely beautiful. Welcome to this week's episode of Over the Influence. It's a hot one. We're melting. But we're not here to talk about the weather. We are here to talk about alcohol-free life and sing about sobriety. It's fabulous to have you listen today. Thank you kindly. If you're wondering, who the heck's she with a northern accent and a sweaty knees? My name is Sharon Hartley, based in Lancashire in the northwest of England. After the summer holidays this year, in September, so I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but I'm quite excited. I will be 5 whole years alcohol free, a statement that I never thought I'd make ever as long as I lived. I took a break from alcohol, wanted to do a stint that was longer than 30 days, got to 90 days, thought I'd go for the year, and here we are. Approaching 5 years alcohol-free. It's ace. It's not always easy, especially if the sun's shining, because it can be triggering left, right and centre. But I tell you what, it's always worth it. This podcast is all about the guest, so hold that thought, because we'll be coming to him in just a sec. Before we do that, Ben, on a scale of 1 to 10, how sweaty are you today?
Wasn't expecting that to be what you said next. I'd say a good solid 7. I have got a fan in this office, but I have to turn it off when we record. Otherwise, you just hear in the background. I'm currently a 7, moving towards an 8. Yeah. By the end, probably 9.5, if not full on 10.
Okay.
But I tell you what, I am a full on 10 in, Sharon. I am fully out, love fully that. 10. This is terrible. I am alcohol free and have been for 3 years.
I'm a fully tanned alcohol free person.
Yeah, I'm 10 out of 10 alcohol free, and 10 out of 10 would recommend it as a lifestyle choice.
I like
because
that.
Oh my God, my life got so much better when I removed alcohol. I didn't think I needed to. I wasn't actually a problematic drinker in the sense that I wasn't physically dependent on alcohol, but drinking undoubtedly caused me problems, because I tell you what, Shaz, them problems ain't there now that I don't drink anymore. I'm a nicer, calmer, generally more stable human being, I think is probably the best way of phrasing it. And yeah, it would be, you know, it's less than a month now till my 3 year
as if
soberversary.
That's crackers.
Free-aversary.
Alcohol free-aversary. That's catchy. Just like your 10 out of 10.
Look, like you said, it's hot.
It's really hot.
Right, let's meet the guest and put all of the kind of pressure on their shoulders to carry this episode.
Yeah, let's do that.
Is it hot in Belfast, Paul?
It is hot for Belfast. It's hot. I've been in shorts and dungarees now for the past like 2 weeks.
Excellent.
Because normally our summer is only about 4 weeks long. So I'm trying to make the most of it.
Before we crack on a scale of 1 to 10, Paul, how hot and sweaty are you on this episode today?
Oh, I'm about a 7 or an 8. A bit like yourself, I'm wet behind the knees. That's always a telltale sign that it's warm.
When you asked me, I kind of was like, yeah, we know each other well. When you asked Paul, it felt a bit, I don't know, it felt
intrusive,
a bit uncomfortable. Yeah,
a bit
Paul,
weird.
Please stay. You know, we've got a whole We've got an hour booked in, so please don't let Sharon Hartley chase you off the podcast before we've even started.
No, I'm definitely an open book, so ask me anything and I'll be as vulnerable and open as I want.
I knew that. No. Paul, it's an absolute pleasure to have you here. Thank you so much. We are joined on the podcast this week by a lovely, lovely young man. I sound like your weird auntie already. He's called Paul O'Donoghue. He's based in Belfast, and Paul is the chap behind a fantastic Instagram page called QRS Belfast, which is Queer Recovery Support Belfast. Paul, welcome to Over the Influence. How are you doing?
I'm very well. Thank you very much for having me. It's always a delight to be here and actually get behind the scenes now and see how it all goes down before it goes on sort of Spotify or Apple Podcast.
We have got so much to talk about. It's a real pleasure to have you here. Before we get into your story and what led you to an alcohol-free life, tell us a bit about you, who you are, what you do.
I'm 31 years young. I currently work as a civil servant at the minute, but I recently got a new job offer. So I'm moving to work with the NHS and the Trust, something that I've wanted to do from I was maybe about 21. And I feel as if when I started getting sober, I started having a wee bit more faith and confidence in myself to go out and make opportunities for myself. So everything now in the second year of sobriety seems to be falling into place nicely for me. Everything's coming up, Paul.
Love that.
It's such a nice saying.
Paul, so you're into your second year. So what is your going alcohol-free date?
It was the last time I had a drink was the 30th of December 2021. So New Year's Eve is actually my anniversary.
So did you know that the 30th of December would be the last time you'd have a drink, or did you decide that when you woke up the next day on New Year's Eve?
I think in a way I did, because it was something that I sort of struggled on and off with for years. I feel as if my early 20s would have been spent a lot more of a binge drinker, but sort of when I started getting into my later 20s, that's when I started to realise that I was having trivial arguments when I was drunk. I've been more of a nastier person, which is not like me at all. I was normally a happy-go-lucky drunk, but sometimes you just didn't know what was going to come out once I started drinking. For myself, and I know with other people on the podcast as well, which is other guests I just have had, for me, alcohol goes hand in hand with drugs. And it was just something that eventually felt like I had no control over. So that last night for me, had a silly, trivial argument with my dad, and then went into the town by myself to a nightclub. I had fallen before I booked the taxi, so my knee was busted. I was hopping. I put myself in a taxi, paralytic drunk, turned up at a nightclub by myself. I knew people there, but I wasn't that friendly with them. So I was able to sit with people that I knew, and I think I had two or three drinks. This was during the height of sort of like a lockdown. You were allowed to go to clubs, but you had to remain seated. You weren't allowed to get up and dance. And I was up trying to sort of work my knee a little bit just to test the pain. And if it was sore when I was drunk, it was even more sore the next day. Then I woke up the next day full of regret, feeling sorry for myself. Then was like, you know what? This is it. Like, I'm going to give it another good go. I had stints before of 3 months, 6 months. But something about that last time, something just clicked. It wasn't like a big revelation or a big rock bottom. There was other rock bottoms that I would say would be more rock bottom-ish. But I don't know, something just clicked in the head and it was like, no, this is the end.
Sharon, before you jump in and ask Paul a question, because I know that you want to, and I know it's probably going to be something along the lines of, you know, oh God, you're so young.
It just goes through my head. Yeah, I've got every admiration. You're so flipping young. But no, go on, Ben.
All I want to do is just quickly clarify something, because Paul, you've got the most lovely accent. I love the Northern Irish accent. I think it's my favourite out of any accent in the whole world ever. You said that you put yourself in the taxi, didn't you? Not that you pooed yourself in a taxi. Just to clarify, because when you first said it, and you know what? On this podcast, we're very honest.
Yeah,
and
anything goes, we're okay.
There's some guests that I wouldn't put that past.
I've done
worse than pooing in a cab. Yeah, but for you, Paul.
I put myself in a taxi. I didn't poo or poop. I put. P-U-T.
Yes, you put yourself in a taxi. Right, Sharon, over to you, and tell Paul how young he is.
I'm so glad. So glad you clarified that. Thank you, Ben. Paul, so are you 31 now? Have I got your age right?
Yep.
Not quite 32 yet. 31 now. So you were 2 years in December. Basically, you did this in your late 20s, you know, at the end of your 20s.
I turned 30 that August, and I stopped in the December. 31st of December.
Still dead young. It still counts. You're still really, really young. Honestly, I've got such admiration for young men in particular that do it at this age. For anybody at any age, you know, if you're setting out an alcohol-free journey, flipping big up your bad self, because it's not easy, as we know. Can we rewind even further to teenage Paul, or even prior to that, because you started drinking, didn't you? So really early, 12, was that your first sort of experience?
Yeah, probably when I started drinking around 11 or 12. And I think it's probably safe to touch on Gabor Mate at this point. And one of the things that he says in The Realm of Hungry Ghost is not to question the addiction, but why the pain? So what is it that you're trying to soothe? What is it that you're trying to numb? And for me, being a working class gay man, growing up in West Belfast, for anyone that might know that, it was hard. Everybody sort of knew I was gay before I knew what gay was. I feel as if I had a parent who was very homophobic when I was growing up, and always made me like side jokes or said things personally to sort of hurt me, it felt like, when I was growing up. They probably didn't see it that way, because looking back now, in hindsight's 2020, they probably didn't even realise the harm that they were causing, or probably thought that those harsh words would change me in a way not to be what they had probably feared. That's what I would like to put it down to. When you know the way that the world is, and when you've got a child that's grown up as gay, you're expecting the bullying and things like that. So maybe it was out of fear. I also had another parent, they would label themselves as an alcoholic. So again, growing up, especially in my teenage years, I witnessed a lot of that. One of the things I had to do at age 10 was ring an ambulance for them, because they had tried to commit suicide. I don't think that they wanted to die. I think that they wanted help and support. For that same parent, I think when I was 17 or 18, I had to do a similar thing again and get them help. That parent is now over 13 years sober as well. So that's just, again, remarkable.
I mean, that is so, it's so painful to hear. But on the flip side of that, that is amazing to hear that parent did it.
Yeah, I'm so proud of them. And although we didn't really say it or not, for really acknowledge it at the time, that parent didn't get like a big yippee for 1 year or anything like that. Me and my sister wanted that parent to get sober for the longest time. But then once it happened, we didn't really acknowledge it. And it's not until where I am now that I realise how big of an achievement that was, and how monumental it was to do it in a time where that was all that parent knew. And they had no support. They went to AA, I think, 3 or 4 times. They only had one really good friend. So they didn't have a support network. They just done it by themselves. And for me, that was always sort of the goal for me. It was like, well, if they can do it, I can do it. I feel as if I've digressed and went off on a tangent. We're still supposed to talk about the teen years. So I will rewind a little bit now and talk about the teen years with sort of all that sort of history. I feel as if that's why I probably became addicted to drinking. I think I started drinking because everybody done it. Sort of the go-to thing when you were 11, 12, when you start experimenting. Prior to that, I had my first cigarette when I was probably about 7, because that's what the adults did. And yeah, you might even have been inhaling it. But it was, again, start of an addictive cycle. I probably then started dabbling in drugs around 15, 16. Hash to begin with, and then the likes of ecstasy. And then sort of the older I got, then that's when I started dabbling in the likes of MDMA and cocaine. My first year of university, my drinking got really bad, where I was drinking, again, listening to what you say, I don't want anybody to measure themselves against this, but I was drinking near a litre bottle of vodka a day. And in my later 20s, I was like, I don't have a problem with alcohol. It's with everything else that I have a problem with. My primary drug of choice in later years then became cannabis. And that was something that I used every single day. As soon as I got home, I'd never done it going to work, but as soon as I got home from work, it was one of the first things I sat down to do, was just to completely numb myself. And looking back now and having conversations with people that have seen me in really, really high states, they have said that it looked like there was no life behind your eyes. Like you were just a zombified vegetable. You were just there, but you weren't living. You were living, I was spending paycheck from paycheck to feed any addiction. That at that time I was like, this isn't addiction. I can stop when I want. I just don't want to stop.
So the kind of the drugs that you settled on using were, you say you tried a few different things, but in the main it was alcohol, cocaine and cannabis. That was the kind of the big three, I suppose. In your email to us, which is amazing, by the way, there's so many different aspects of your story.
It's a phenomenal email. Honestly.
Great.
Yeah.
But you gave up cocaine first, and that was on the 3rd of December. And then the 29th of December, this is 2021, so that same month, you had your last drink. And it was in the January that you had your last smoke. Was there a kind of plan? Did you kind of go, right, I'm going to do that first and that first? Or did you kind of remove cocaine and then go, right, every time I have a drink?
Well, I mentioned before that there was a couple of stints where I was doing like alcohol free for maybe a couple of weeks, couple of months at a time. And I did quit cocaine for 699 days. Because I remember resetting that number literally nearly killed me. And I think it was resetting that number when I knew that something had to change, something had to give. But it was a wedding I was at, and I was actually off the alcohol for a while. I was also off cannabis for a while. It was sort of one of my first proper goals of being like a teetotal, apart from cigarettes. And at that wedding, I was to give a speech. And I'm terrible at public speaking, especially in front of large audiences where I might only know half the room. So I had a drink. And when I say I had a drink, it was a double Jack and Coke. That was just the wee one for me. And then I was halfway through my second one when I gave the speech. And then as soon as dinner was over, I sort of knew that that wedding was going to be full of gear. By gear, I mean cocaine. So I think there was a pre-notion there in the back of my mind leading up to it. I was like, it's a wedding. It's a big event. It's okay. You've been doing so well. You're allowed to break. And I think that was buried in the subconscious before it even got to the wedding. And then, as I say, once that sort of second drink was in me, like all bets were off and it started choosing again. And then to come down that evening at 4 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning, and then smoke cannabis again. So it felt for me that, yes, I didn't want to use cocaine until I was maybe two or three drinks in. So I knew if I stopped drinking, that would cut out cocaine. And cannabis was sort of on its own, but I knew that it wasn't adding any value to my life, especially financially, where I was spending the guts of 70 to 140 pounds a week to feed any addiction. And it was just like, I can't do it anymore. One of the first times I quit, I was able to buy myself a pair of Christian Louboutins for £550 after 3 or 4 months of not smoking. And it was just, that should have told me back then that it wasn't having any sort of real value to my life. And I actually did quit, as you said, Ben, the cocaine first at the beginning of the December. The alcohol and the cannabis actually went at the end of the December, but I kept a little bit of cannabis because I was one of those people that sometimes I like to hold trophies to be like, I've now got the power over you. And it was just a little bit. It was like, I have like a rolling box and it was all the dregs in there rather than binning it. And then at the end of the January, I just smoked what I had in the house to get rid of it. And it was like, no, this is in the back of my mind. I could have binned it. But then I suppose the addict in me would have been like, well, that's just a waste. And then the selfishness in me would have been like, don't give it away. Just use it, cut it to there. So that's what I've done. And as I say, I haven't looked back since. And since quitting, all those things that I thought it was helping me with, such as my anxiety and my depression, has got tremendously better. Who knew that quitting alcohol and drugs was going to fix things?
It's mad, isn't it? Who knew?
I'm really interested. As you know, I'm interested in the substance of alcohol. You know, and what something you said earlier on about how, you know, you started to become nastier when you drank. You know, it was a version of yourself that you didn't recognize. Like, I totally get that. And we've had so many guests on this podcast, and it was one of the big reasons for me why, you know, I originally said, yeah, 3 months off. But actually, you know, that was a huge reason for me to do this full time, is that I couldn't predict what person would come out. And I don't believe this thing that alcohol just kind of, you know, it tells people how you really feel. You know, it doesn't. I feel like alcohol, the substance of alcohol, made me into a different version of me. Like, it was, you know, drinker Ben and non-drinker Ben. I can't link those two people at all. It's the substance of alcohol that didn't work for me. Interestingly, when it comes to kind of addiction, you know, that 699 days that you did and you went to this wedding, so that the sequence of events was alcohol, cocaine, cannabis. If it had been reversed and someone had said, oh, you smoke this with me, do you think that would have led to, would it have gone the other way? Would it have gone then cannabis, cocaine, alcohol?
Well, when I was sort of using every day, I was able to go out and literally smoke and drink at the same time. Some people can't. And I know that from experience and sitting in circles. There's actually a bar in Belfast, and I won't mention the name, where you can go sit in the beer garden, and as long as you're discreet about rolling a joint, you can sit and smoke a joint just and have a drink, and like, that's fine. Like, that's the norm. And that was something that I was able to do. Even one of the local bars, it was frowned upon, but as long as you sort of walked up the street a bit and they could smell it off you as soon as you came back. Like, drinking and cannabis sort of went hand in hand with me, the same as drinking and cocaine. So under that, because it was a wedding and because of the sort of event that it was, I would feel if I had been still smoking the way that I was, I probably would have smoked all that morning, then had a drink.
Got you.
And then went on to cocaine.
The reason that I ask is because the one that's legal there is alcohol. You know, yeah. the one that's available to anybody over the age of 18, you know, I can go and get a pint within 2 minutes. I can go and get a bottle of vodka within 3, you know. Like, that's the legal one. But, you know, for a lot of people, that it tends to be the trigger.
For me, cannabis went hand in hand with alcohol, as well as cocaine went hand in hand with alcohol. So if I had went cannabis first, I still probably would have ended up drinking, which then still would have led to cocaine at that particular event.
I think you're amazing, and I think where you are now is testament to your character and your strength, because, you know, you've shared that it wasn't easy being a young, well, we're talking child here, aren't we, even sort of pre-teenager. You said that people in your area knew that you were gay before you knew that you were gay, growing up in a working class Belfast area. What was that like for you as young Paul? It makes me just want to give you a big old squeeze.
So my mum would always use the phrase that I would have went with Nick, as in I would have went with the devil. So I was quite a naive young child and would have went with anyone, everybody that I met, with my friend. So no matter sort of how cruel people were, as long as they were being a friend, I would have seen that as being a friend. And like, saying sorry would have fixed everything. So I do think a lot of my sort of childhood, and even some of my teenage years, is like completely blacked from my memory. And I think that is down to trauma. So I would say, I know that I was bullied a lot growing up. And I know that that weighed a lot on my shoulders. Especially when I was being, one of my first bullies was a parent. Whether or not they were aware that they were doing that or not, it does seem like a lot of the things that were said to me when I was younger growing up had an impact on me throughout my teenage years and even into my adult life. So yeah, as I said, it's going back to that sort of Gabor Mate quote, and it was sort of trying to numb that pain rather than dealing with it, and rather than trying to find a resolve and understanding that unfortunately it can't be changed, and the only thing I could really do was make peace with it and move on from it and sort of change my present to change my future, rather than being sort of stuck, as you say, Shaz, in that vicious hamster wheel of hell that just come round and
yeah,
living that over and over again.
That's such a it's such a big thing, though, isn't it? Because when we talk about removing alcohol, and in this case, removing drugs and alcohol, clean and sober, which is ace. Well done, you. It's brilliant. We always talk about the fact that, oh, you've got to sit with your emotions and you've got to feel all the feels. And for some people, that's at this end of the scale where, you know, it's okay. You'll manage. You'll get through it. And then at this end of the scale, you've got childhood trauma. You've got bullying because of your sexuality. You've got a lot to deal with there. How the hell have you navigated that?
I don't know, I think.
And continue to do so, I suppose.
Yeah. Just to sort of add that as well, sort of when you come to age, especially as part of the LGBTQ plus community, once you start going out to those gay bars and the sing, you start to feel like you've found your tribe and you've found your people. And I remember, as clear as day, one of the first things I heard was a gay weekend starts on a Thursday and ends on a Monday. And for the longest time, I partied like that, especially in sort of my late teens, early 20s. You sort of start getting sober, you can sort of feel that disconnect from that community that you sort of found sort of your common place with and your peace with, where you sort of felt accepted maybe for the first time. But when you start getting sober, then that's when you can start to feel sort of isolated and ostracized from that community, where you feel as if you've found your people and your tribe.
And that's like having to go through it all again. Because like you say, you've found your people. It's like, oh, God, these people are just like me. Fantastic. And then when you want to get sober and don't want to party from Thursday through until Tuesday or whatever it might be, it's like, oh God, where do I go now? What do I do next?
Yeah, so there was actually, I'm going down a rabbit hole, just kind of popped into my head.
There
was a time where I was sort of off drugs for a while, and it was the night before Fleetwood Mac. I was out partying and someone offered me an ecstasy, and I hadn't taken ecstasy in a long time. And I was like, yeah, you know what? I used to take like four or five of these. I should be all right. And took one. And a bouncer actually had to break down the bathroom door and carry me down the back entrance of a nightclub. After the nightclub had closed, and the nightclub had been closed a good half an hour, and I was literally curled up, found on the floor. And that should have been a telltale sign for me to stop doing drugs and stop that life. That was probably one of the big rock bottom moments that should have been a wake-up call. But unfortunately, it wasn't. And it felt a bit shit for a while, a couple of weeks even. And then I was sort of not taking ecstasy again, but was sort of back to doing drugs and partying like I was. That was in my mid-20s, and I was partying like I was in my early 20s. And it's safe to say that Fleetwood Mac, not that it was ruined, because they're an extraordinary band, but it wasn't as good as what it should have been.
Shaz, you know exactly what Paul's talking about, because obviously you had your weekend of music, didn't you? Completely sober. You saw every minute of Coldplay, because you didn't need to. First of all, you weren't queuing at the bar.
Nope.
Then you didn't get too drunk not to see them.
Nope.
You weren't queuing for the toilets for ages.
Exactly that.
And it's a good job you saw every minute of Coldplay, because blimey, tell me how much them tickets
cost.
Just
move on. It was an opportunity.
Someone's doing well.
You know, it was an opportunity. I had to say yes. But I'll tell you something. Coldplay, Elton John and Pink, actually.
In one weekend?
Over a few days. I was just very lucky. Everything just fell into place at the right time.
That sounds like one of the gay weekends you were talking about, Paul.
It does, doesn't it?
Starts on Thursday and lasts on Monday, with a bit of Elton in there.
Absolutely. Pink as well. I mean, come on.
Pink.
Absolutely brilliant. But yeah, the very, very quickly, because I don't want to get into this now. Sober concerts, dear God. I literally watched the last credit roll, you know, of the all the names and all the people involved in these productions, literally until the lights went on, and it was like amazing. I've been to many gigs before now, Paul, when I've fallen asleep in the audience. I don't remember it. I've been on somebody's shoulders. Somebody showed me a photo the next day. You're like, oh, God, really? Okay. So I feel your pain. I've not been locked in any toilet.
She pooed herself in a taxi.
Never pooed myself in a taxi. Ever. We are just going to take a really quick break from this fabulous chat. I love him. He's just so, so nice. Back with Paul very, very shortly, and he's got loads more to share. Before we do that, let's just talk alcohol-free premium content, Ben. And I don't know why I needed to do it in that voice with an air of gravitas.
Because it's an exceptional show, the Over the Influence Premium Podcast. You know what, Sharon? It's available, by the way, for £5 a month if you subscribe via the channel. If you're an Apple Podcast listener, then you'll see the subscribe button on the main podcast channel. If you are listening on like Spotify, Google Podcasts, any other Androidy type stuff, then you've got to go to overtheinfluence.supercast.com. That's overtheinfluence.supercast.com. And then you can import it into your podcast app from there. But I think we've undersold it before. We kind of sell the premium podcast as it's me and you unleashed. Like it's kind of learn more about us behind the scenes. I have to say, the debate that it's provoking at the moment, the whole thing about alcohol advertising, it's kicking off, Shaz.
It's gone off. It really has. Yeah, it's... And a lot of people tell us, you know, when the podcasts are released really early on a Monday morning, so you've got the main pod, the amount of people that say, save the main pod for later, start with a premium each week, sets me up, you know, ready to go. Yeah. The feedback, and we're not just saying this, it's because it's true, the feedback on the premium podcast is fabulous. It's basically an extra episode of Over the Influence each and every week. It's a joy to record. There's a lot of lols in the premium podcast as well. Really, really good.
Yeah, there is. But it is the whole alcohol advertising thing is quite serious. Like, basically, long story short, we call him Super Steve. His name's Stephen Donnelly, who's the health minister over in Ireland. They've recently brought in that it's been passed that from 2026, alcohol labels will have to have the kind of warning labels on like cigarettes have. You know, alcohol links to cancer, for example, is one of the labels that's going to be on Irish alcohol bottles from 2026. But apparently Super Steve is now looking into some of the alcohol advertising rules. So he wants to put a watershed in that you can't advertise alcohol before 9 p.m, for example, on TV and radio. But another thing that he's looking into is the advertising of 0% drinks. And the idea being that is advertising 0% drinks, so Guinness Zero, for example, at Twickenham, or Heineken Zero at Silverstone, is that just a cynical way for advertising companies to get their alcoholic brand, Heineken or Guinness, in front of consumers? Is it a way for them to cynically bypass laws? Like, for example, in Ireland, Shaz, there is actually a law that it's illegal to advertise an alcoholic product on a sports field, for example. You know, is advertising Guinness Zero a clever way for them to still get Guinness, the word Guinness, on the sports field without... Look, it's been raging. That's the kind of content we do on the premium podcast. Subscribe now. Have a listen to it and see what you think. And you can always click on subscribe. You know, give us a month. So, yeah. In fact, you get a free trial on Apple.
You do. You get a 7-day free trial. And when you dip in to the premium podcast, you've got instant access to the back catalogue. And there's around a squillion episodes. I'm not prone to exaggeration at all. There's a lot. There's a stack, actually. It'll get you right through the summer. If it's your summer in the UK now listening to this and you're after a little bit more support. I've just got to apologise while I'm speaking. There's a beagle by my feet. Get out. Get out. Sorry, professional as ever here at Over the Influence. I'm going to open this door in a minute because the dog needs to get out. There's a load of content to go at. It will help you through the summer, or if you're on the other side of the world, through the winter as well. Like Ben said, you can find the free trial on Apple. Or if you don't use Apple and you'd like to subscribe, it's pence per day. It's just a fiver a month. Overtheinfluence.supercast.com. Fill your boots. It's dead good. Right, let's get back to the episode with Paul.
Paul, let's talk about these positives then. So what have you found then since you found sobriety and, you know, complete sobriety from, you know, drugs and alcohol? Alcohol, we can argue, is a drug, probably one of the worst, but, you know, in terms of kind of, you know, how society, drugs and alcohol, like, what has happened for you since being completely teetotal?
Well, I think, sort of start with this, when I was younger, I was tried to be forced into counselling a few times, which didn't work. In my mid-20s, I did go to counselling properly because I wanted to be. And I was open, I was honest, I was vulnerable. And then 2 years had passed and I went back to the same service and went into counselling again. And I believe sort of working through some of those childhood traumas and some of those issues that I'm quite comfortable talking about now helped me set a foundation for my sobriety that I didn't even realise needed to be there. It's similar to what you were saying earlier, Shaz, where some people get sober and then further down the line, that's when they start with all these big feelings and processing all this repressed trauma. Whereas I feel I sort of give myself a bit of a head start there because I had started dealing with it before I got sober. But in the same breath, I want to say that's what led me to sobriety because I realized I didn't need to numb myself anymore. I then did need to feel through it. So one of the first things that I sort of realized was I was a lot more emotional than what I thought I was. It wasn't just 1 to 100 with sort of aggression and irritation. It was, I watched Billy Elliot, the musical, on TV and cried. So I always someone who said that I hadn't cried in years. And then I was just watching something and tears started running down my face.
Best film, though. It's your best film.
I cried at Avatar last night.
Oh, God, did you?
He looked across. She went, "You crying?" I was like, "You know, I don't want to ruin it for anyone, but they did it."
Have you just given a massive spoiler there?
No, I mean, Avatar came out like 15 years ago, the original Avatar. So you should have. I'm sorry if I've just spoiled it for you, but you probably should have watched it.
I thought
by
you
now.
Was on about Way of Water or Way of the Water,
new one. I've watched the old one to start the new one. Yeah, yeah.
Phew. You pair of emotional beings.
But I mean, you know, spoiler alert, it's a movie where good versus evil and good triumphs.
Ah, Kelsbury.
Can you believe it?
No.
Can you believe it? Speaking of good triumphing, Paul, back to you then.
Back to Billy Elliot.
Billy Elliot. Back to Billy.
Yeah, it's just really feeling your emotions and connecting with them. And I just, I've been able to experience them rather than suppressing them. My mental health's got so much better, but I think that's come from exercising. It's not to say I didn't exercise when I was drinking and using, but I might have done it for maybe a stint of 3 or 4 months and then got bored of it, where I've now been exercising consistently for a year. And I definitely feel as if that's played a huge part in bettering my mental health. Last September, I think it was, I was actually able to come off my antidepressants as well. Just because I felt that I was in a better place and I was able to sort of bear back life without any sort of substance.
I love that phrase. Can you just explain that for because I think we only know that phrase, Sharon, because Charlie Martina, who is a 20-something, told us about what
right,
what's
okay.
The title of
raw dogging reality. And I
sorry, raw dogging.
I didn't know what raw dogging was because I'm an old.
No, not nor did I.
And we were like, what's raw dogging? What is it? I'm still not.
Write this thing called raw dogging reality. I understood the first half of that sentence, but not the second.
Yeah.
What do you mean by raw dogging or barebacking?
Is it the same?
I would say if it's not the same, then I would say it's quite similar. It's just in terms where you're not using sort of any protection as such to help you deal with reality. So you're not sort of loading up on other things that live in a sort of simulation of reality rather than literally experiencing it for what it is.
Not numbing with anything. You know, you're not putting a saddle on the horse, you're just jumping straight on that horse's back and riding off into the sunset.
Picturing Ben now, straddling a big horse with no saddle. Just off he trots. I think I prefer the term barebacking rather than raw dogging. I think there's something about raw dogging that's, I think I should know, but I don't.
It made you feel a bit ill, didn't it, love?
Yeah, and I think I need to stop talking about it because we're going down another rabbit hole here. Right, let's bring it back. I think it's amazing, Paul, what you said there about coming off antidepressants. That's a huge thing, isn't it? But all this, it's an ongoing journey, isn't it? It all takes time. It all takes work. But the payoff for you, you're getting there massively, aren't you? In fact, you're more than getting there. You know, we never say you're there, I think, in sobriety, because it is It is a continual journey, isn't it? Sorry for using the J word.
No, I completely agree. I think it's something that I sort of post about regularly is about sort of evolving. And when I met my partner, I said, I'm not the same person I was 6 months ago. And 6 months from now, I'm not going to be the person I am now. I'm going to continue evolving and becoming a better version of me the best way that I know how. So yeah, I don't think that any of us or anyone is going to be the same person that they are now, 6 months from now, because life happens and it's how you deal with that which is going to sort of change your circumstances, either for better or worse. But I would rather do it all sober and actually experience it properly. A sort of other benefits, like sometimes it's just like the stupid stuff, like seeing the magic in everyday life.
I love the stupid stuff.
Now, in spring with the flowers blooming and just knowing the whole spectrum of colour that you might see walking through a park. The photo that went up today on the OTI Instagram, seeing a sunset, and I think it's, or sorry, a sunrise, and I think it's the first time that I've ever got up, climbed a hill and watched a sunrise, and it was just beautiful.
Oh.
And so it's the little things that make sobriety so much worth it. It's the magic in everyday life.
People think I'm off my rocker when I start going on about this sort of stuff. When I talk about the birds and the little things, it's those little things that become the big things. And when you see your first sunrise, it takes your breath away, doesn't it? Your picture on our Instagram, have a look at Alcohol Free Pod Over the Influence on Insta. And it's just beautiful. You are there. And this, would you describe it? You were there. I'll shut up.
It's hard to describe because I don't think a photograph can capture a sunrise. For anyone that's seen a sunrise, a photo just won't do it justice. It was a really beautiful sunrise because it was like a blood sun. The sun was so red coming up. And even the other people on the hill, it's a group that do it once a month, said they've never seen the sun that red. So I guess we were lucky. It was just so breathtaking.
Paul, it's so lovely to listen to you speak, not just because you've got the best accent ever, but because you're obviously just really enjoying life. And I want to go back to your email. You said, in my 20s, you know, my 20s were a blackout, and I want to remember my 30s. I'm passionate about my recovery and my well-being, and I'm also passionate about seeing other people succeed and grow in an alcohol-free environment. It's just beautiful to see people blossom and reach new potentials. How is QRS_Belfast on Instagram going? And QRS stands for, again, is it Queer Recovery Support?
It is, yeah.
How's that going, first of all?
I feel like it's going really well. It's still quite a new space. I wanted to have a year sobriety under my belt before, I just in case it was the lapse or relapse in my first year. And I'm not saying that it won't happen now, but I'm sort of pretty confident that I don't want that anymore and it's not for me. And I don't think that there's anything that would drive me back, but I suppose never say never. But it's going really well. I have people that turn up every week, similar to the OTI community and the Zooms. It's just a place to get together, reflect on your week, check in with how you're doing. Sometimes we don't even speak about alcohol-free life. We'll just talk about how we are that week. When I first tried to get sober during lockdown, the first lockdown, I started asking around about like queer sober spaces or queer recovery groups. And the only thing I was able to find was a gay AA group that was based in Derry, Londonderry. And unfortunately, the person who ran that passed away, and nobody ever picked it up once they went. So there was definitely, I felt, a market for it. And it's come back to that sort of sense of community that you feel when you first go onto the scene, per se. And then when you start getting sober, you start to feel that isolation and you start to feel ostracized. There was actually somebody at the group on Sunday who said, very early days sobriety, but it's like, it doesn't matter if you go and you play sports or you go out for a meal, it always ends in a bar. And yeah, I know that's probably absolutely the same across the board. But again, it's something like that's sort of ingrained in the queer community. I think it was in Catherine Gray, Sunshine Warm Sober, she got a quote that says, "It feels something along the lines that it feels like the foundation of the queer community is built on drugs and alcohol because it literally started in a bar with Stonewall." That just sort of always sticks in the back of my mind, that it started in a bar because of Stonewall. And I just think there's so much more to the community. I think they're artistic. I think they've got a flair for the creative. And it doesn't always have to be fueled with alcohol and drugs. So it's trying to create a more sort of positive space that's not centered around getting blotted drunk or taking a load of drugs.
And you're doing exactly that. Can we talk about it now? Go on.
Can we do it? Can we talk about it? Because we haven't. We've waited right to the end of the episode because this is, you know, very much about Paul and his story. But Paul, we got you on as a guest, and then you were like, "Oh, I've been influenced," and you became a community member. So we've got to know you really well.
No.
Over, like you said, "Oh, yeah, it's quite like the Over the Influence community." It's because you're part of
you're
it.
Flipping
you're
idiots.
There all the time. Yeah. Like, what do you think about OTI? How are you finding Over the Influence?
I actually really love Over the Influence. Sometimes I check in. There's days where sometimes I'll maybe go like a week, because I'm sure you all know that sober life is just gets really busy.
It's busy.
How did we ever find the time to drink two drugs?
It's mad.
But even if I'm not always commenting or not always posting, I'll always go for a wee creep and throw a wee like on the forum post. I absolutely love the forum post. I love the Zooms. I try to get to at least one a week. But again, that's similar to why I started QRS. It's for that connection and that community. It was 7 months into my sobriety that I feel as if I had done most of it by myself, with obviously I have a parent who's 13 years sober. My partner has since got sober. He's just hit 10 months, but I don't have like a lot of, I've got now really supportive friends who probably have always been supportive, but I would have chose other friends when I was in the height of my addiction over them. Because the other friends were the more fun friends. And I know not everybody can see me. The fun was in inverted commas. So I feel as if it moved away from certain friendship groups that still revolve around smoking cannabis every day and drinking alcohol. And I'm more focused on people that want to experience real community and connection. But I sort of digressed. It was 7 months into sobriety and felt as if, as I say, isolated myself and ostracized myself from the community. So I tried to find that sort of connection. I tried AA. It wasn't for me. I tried a local group called Inspire, which again, similar to what I do and what OTI is doing. It was a 2-hour call once a week where you checked in about your week. And the focus there was a lot more on sort of drug, alcohol and recovery and talking about triggers and things like that. But I felt a real sense of connection and I stayed with that for a while. But coming back now full circle to OTI, I think you found me on Instagram in December, just before I sort of launched QRS, and I started listening to the podcast. And when I say that I am healed up, I mean, I think it was 2 or 3 months, and I think you were on episode 102 of series 3, and I'd done that in like 2 or 3 months.
That's a lot. Oh my god.
And I was just like, no, I want to get involved with these people. Like, I want to know more. And then I messaged you about coming on the podcast, and it was like, I'm riddled with anxiety, so I'm gonna have to get to know these people before I go on the podcast. So then I joined the community, and it was like, I'll join for a while and see what it's like. And the membership just keeps rolling now. It's just, the supporters, unbelievable. No matter if you're on, you haven't hit day one yet, you're day 10, or you're 5 years down the line, it's for everybody.
Love that.
Good bunch, isn't it?
Love it. Absolutely love it. I'm so glad we connected on Insta. It's just, the sober community, it's a fabulous place, isn't it? It really is. And I think it's really important that you're doing what you're doing with the queer recovery support based in Belfast. I hope it grows nationwide and then worldwide. And if we can do anything to help you with that, you know, you must let us know, because connection, it's imperative, isn't it? Because it can be a lonely road at times, but once you find your tribe and find your people, you'll start to fly. And Paul, you've done exactly that. You're just one of the loveliest people we've ever met. I've really enjoyed that.
Well, thank you very much. With QRS as well, just because we're based in Belfast, we do run obviously online, apart from the Sober Social once a month. So no matter where you are in the world, if you're free at 6 p.m. at UK time, and you're more than welcome to come along, just get in touch. And just because it's queer recovery support, it is targeted to the LGBTQ plus community, but it's not necessarily just for them. So it is open to anyone that feels that they might benefit from that space.
And what's the best way for people to get in touch? Is it through Instagram?
Yeah, they can get in touch via my Instagram, which is qrs_Belfast, or they can get in touch via email at qrs.belfast@gmail.com.
Thank you so much, Paul O'Donoghue. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you both very much for having me on. It's been an absolute delight.
Thank you so much to community member Paul. What a lovely, lovely fella. And as he mentioned there, if you want any further information about what he does, based in Belfast, you can find him on Instagram. It's QRS_Belfast, queer recovery support, based in Belfast, just getting people together, like-minded people doing really, really lovely things. In fact, I hope Paul doesn't mind me saying this, he's a super fan. I know he enjoys the podcast. Super fan might be a stretch too far. He's not here to say yay or nay, is he?
Maybe you've been thinking about it, by the way, since I mentioned it in the middle bit. Maybe you've been thinking, oh, I've never thought about that, about the advertising of 0% drinks. Is it a good thing to highlight the fact that there are non-alcoholic options available? Or is it a cynical way for big alcohol companies to advertise their main alcohol brand names, you know, the Guinness part? They put a zero next to it, they're still getting Guinness on the pitch when otherwise they might not be allowed to. Look, if you've been thinking about it, get involved in our premium podcast. You can subscribe for £5 a month. Just go to the subscribe bit on the main podcast channel on Apple, and you 7-day free trial. Listen back to the back catalogue. You can try and fit it all into 7 days, you probably won't be able to. Or if you listen on Spotify normally, or Google Podcasts, or whatever, anything that's not Apple, basically, go to overtheinfluence.supercast.com. That is overtheinfluence.supercast.com, and you can subscribe there. Oh, I thought you got your hand up then, but you're just scratching your head.
I'm just scratching my head. In fact, I was just wiping the beads of sweat off my face, because as we're recording, we're having a heat wave, aren't we? It's really... really warm. And actually, can I just quickly jump in there? I'm just going to go down just a little side note, a little tangent. The weather, it's so triggering for so many people. And I get this. For a couple of summers, I proper struggled. I didn't drink. I knew I wasn't going to drink. But it's not to say it's not difficult, because it flipping well is when the sun can be shining. As Ben said, if you just want a little bit more in your AF toolkit, get your ears around that premium pod. We've got so much in there. We talk about the weather. We talk about the triggers. We talk about everything. Absolutely everything. Who knew there was so much to talk about in alcohol-free life? You can try us for free on Apple. Just select the free trial What's It button. And like Ben said, if you're not on Apple, just go to overtheinfluence.supercast.com. Honestly, there's absolutely loads of stuff there. Thank you for listening. As always, it's been a pleasure. And we will be back, same time, next week.